Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM, WCWP. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan, and today my co-host is Jerry Peretzman.
Good morning again.
And we're here this morning with Roger Tillisman and Tillies. I don't know what's wrong with me this morning. I know what the name is. And this really, I mean, the first half we've been talking about charter schools and the regents and all the importance of testing, etc. But Roger wears so many hats, and since we have him here for a limited time, I want to shift to the arts and to his work, his interfaith work, which is tremendous. I was at the Bethel Seder this past year. I've gone a couple of years, and that's when I was talking to Roger. But I know you're involved in Project Understanding, and the kids were all there, which I just think is tremendous. I live in Great Neck, but I grew up in Flushing. I went to St. Anne's. I went to Holy Cross. I went to St. John's. I think the first time I was, it was in St. John's, was the first time I met a Jewish person. And I'm not, 100 years old. This is,
And you're living in New York.
In New York. That was the first time, because you went through two Catholic schools. Your program is great.
Exactly why 28 years ago, Father Tom Hartman, Monsignor Hartman, and I became very fast friends. Because of a program here at the Tillis Center we were doing together, it was the anniversary of Kristallnacht, which was the night that the Nazis started their campaign against the Jews. And so Tom and I actually ended up running that program that was here. And we became very fast friends because we found out we were born 1 hour apart.
Really?
Yeah. And so Tom is absolutely the most wonderful person that I've ever met. He grew up in East Williston, similar to you. He didn't meet Jewish people until he went to college.
Okay.
I grew up in Great Neck, which had some Catholics, but we really didn't get to know people of another faith until I went to college. So we said we should do something to break that down before it's we and them. And we started a program called Project Understanding 28 years ago, where we ask priests and parochial school principals and rabbis to nominate kids, juniors in high school, actually sophomores in high school, because the year that we work with them is junior year.
Okay, junior.
And they do a variety of things together. They work at a homeless shelter. They go to masses. They go to temples. And culminating in a trip to Israel, which is led by a Catholic leader and a Jewish leader.
Just to interrupt you for 1 second.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a trip.
Oh, no.
I didn't realize there's all this interaction before it. I thought it was just a trip and they got together and
Before the trip, it's very important that these kids know each other and respect each other. And actually, every year it has worked without exception, that the kids come back from the trip saying, this changed my life. This was had to be the best trip that you've ever had. And indeed, then they come back for that interfaith Seder. And then the next year, when they're seniors, they will go and visit each other's schools and temples and churches and tell about their experience. So it disseminates it out to a larger group about what is interfaith activity. And we thought, Tom Hartman and I thought, when we met with Bishop McGann to ask permission for this, that it was going to be a trip or an experience that would say, okay, we'd like to learn more about your faith, and understand it. That's Project Understanding. And that certainly has happened. But I would say that the most significant thing that comes out of this trip is being much stronger in your own faith. Because you're now, when you go on that trip 24/7, you're answering questions from your Catholic or Jewish friends about why do you do this and why do you do that? And, and they're questions that I never thought of until I was much, much older as an adult. And if at all, I think many people just never think of it. You do it because it's supposed to be done. And I know these kids have come back stronger. We've developed three rabbis have come out of the trip.
Really?
Two priests have come out of the trip. And I don't know, countless lay leaders of both religions. And it really is a significant trip. It's probably, of all the things that I do, we've had over 200 kids now over the years. it's probably the best bang for the buck in terms of having an impact. And kids from the first trip 28 years ago are still in touch with us. We ask for donations from anybody, their families, whatever. We're still getting checks from people from the because it's a completely subsidized trip from the now kids who are 45 years old.
Of course.
Who are sending checks for they're working for KPMG or whatever else, and so they send it because it's
that still, in itself is a wonderful tribute to it.
It still meant something to them.
Right, exactly.
Well, your efforts have created a fantastic environment. I had a grandson who didn't go on the trip, but because of the environment you created, his name is Alec Levy. He played basketball for St. Albans. That's the sort of thing that in my day it would have never happened, never did happen. It wasn't that people was prejudiced. People simply weren't aware that you could be together with people of different faiths so readily.
Father Tom told me that in East Williston, growing up, he was only allowed to play in the little league that had Catholics. It didn't say Irish Catholics, say Catholics, no. And not a Protestant team, which you know symbolizes a lot of what was going on then, and that really isn't. I mean, it's not just our trip that breaks that.
No, of course, but it's
the environment you people.
Yeah,
you know, when I first started dating. It was a German Catholic girl. My grandmother wanted to know why I couldn't get an Irish one.
Right.
You know, I mean, that was right. The way it was. There's no question about it. So when those kids that speak at Bethel from this trip, I mean, it's an amazing thing. And it's so important today, the merging of people that, you know, it's not judgmental. We're sitting here today, everybody should be friends, and that's the end of it. But that really, 28 years, I had no idea that it went on for that long. But you're also very involved in arts, too, which is also a very, you know, you touched on it earlier when we were talking about the schools, that arts and programs like that get hurt if the teachers are going to be focusing on English and math just for them to get their scores.
Well, the arts in schools, as a regent, I've been really proposing a couple of things. One, not that schools retain their arts, which many schools are not, because of the emphasis on testing, but to increase their arts, schools that have very good arts programs, and many on Long Island do, really have a big advantage because it not only gives something that children want to come to school for, which in a high needs district, which doesn't even have a band or orchestra, these kids have nothing to want to come to school for in many cases, and a sports team or that, and the high needs districts don't have them. So unless there's something the kids want to come to school for, and
just why do the higher needs districts not have them?
Because
money?
Well, a combination of money in some cases, mismanagement.
Oh, okay.
In some cases, the emphasis on testing has forced them to use their resources on two periods of English a day and periods of math instead of having a chorus or whatever else. And it's very clear when I've gone to a high-needs district that has, for instance, a chorus, as in Central Islip when I went, the graduation rate at that point was for the school was about 50%, which is pretty low. When I went to visit their chorus, which was fantastic and was going to Salzburg, Austria for the Mozart bicentennial, I asked them, how many of you are graduating? And every hand went up. I said, why you and not your peers? And they said, well, we love music. We want to be in the chorus. And our choral instructor won't let us stay in the chorus unless we do our work. And he calls us every week to make sure we're doing our work. Well, this is not rocket science. This is the problem with most of the high needs kids who don't have that kind of support.
Wow. But, you know, it's something that they lose later in life, too. Don't have that exposure. Early years, you don't pick it up later in life. You lead a much narrower life, and I think that's a loss that you can't always measure.
Yeah.
And people who want to cut these things out don't appreciate that.
Well, you know, I look at it, it's interesting. I've been involved with education for a long time. When I graduated law school, my first job was director of law and education, law and legislation for the Michigan Department of Education, and I became a member of the Michigan State School Board many years ago. And it becomes very clear that the arts have a real, not only is it something that kids want to come to school for, but it brings out the portion of their brain that is so important in terms of creativity, and so important in terms of understanding even subjects like English and math.
Right, right.
That they're really at a disadvantage if they don't have the arts. And the long run is the arts really provide a basis for life in many ways, which is why I think the Tiller Center is so important for us here on Long Island, because it affects so many people, and I'm very proud of that fact. But it does create a certain life image for people that wouldn't exist otherwise.
I agree with you there. It's like the Broadway of Long Island, really. The different performances, etc., that people wouldn't have access to because you can't get into Manhattan necessarily, especially a senior, you know, Huntington. It's nicer to go.
Aside from the performances itself, it creates the impression, which is true, there's a lot more going on in Long Island that you become aware of because you're there, you start hearing about this. People say, if you're going to, for example, you're going to hear the Cleveland Orchestra, someone will say, well, you know, there's a nice little orchestra out in so-and-so. Why don't you go out there on a Sunday and hear them? Or there's a Bach thing going on somewhere. If you don't have this as an anchor, you'll lose that, too.
Well, this is the reason we started probably 15 years ago. I was asked to get involved with the arts for the business community, the Long Island Association. I was on their board. And they said, you know, you have the Tiller Center. What? I said, well, a lot of people who even come to the Tiller Center think that somehow we're second rate to New York City. And the same orchestra, the Cleveland Orchestra, the Boston Symphony, Jerusalem Symphony, would be playing in our place and then going the next night to the Tiller Center. We have the New York Philharmonic comes out several times a year. And somehow even our patrons felt that it was not first class. So we started along on Arts Alliance, and it was very difficult to get arts institutions working with each other. But they do now, and it has become a very significant factor of all the institutions working together. And it has, we do co-marketing, we do co-producing, we collaborate with each other on different programs, and we have a scholar artist program for high school students. It's become a very, very viable organization and important to Long Island, Long Island Arts Alliance. It's based here at LIU Post.
LIU Post, that's the name change. Right. We're going to have to take a break. We're done. This is amazing. A half hour. The important thing that I'm getting out of this is the importance of Roger Tillis to the neighborhood. And I mean
to
that very sincerely. To Long Island. That's why
I
said you have to come on, but you have to come on again. I mean, we could do a whole show because it's not just one thing you're touching. You're touching the lives of so many different people in so many different areas. You've been listening to 88.1 FM. Thank you, Roger, so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.